You're listening to a DayOne.fm show.
What is a good use case for an AI agent?
At the moment, most of the business problems don't need an AI agent to solve.
Interesting.
Most people don't fully understand what AI agent actually is. Most of the AI agent out there, we call them AI agent, they're just simply AI workflows.
I love that you're already being so honest. Thank you. Are you pro ASI, Will, or are you anti?
Oh, that is a very challenging one.
The Studio Ghibli memes everywhere. Do you use Perplexity, Will? Do you like it? Does NVIDIA remain a monopoly, Will? Hello, everyone. We have our first live show of In the Blink of AI next month, Thursday, 29th of May. It's going to be at the University of New South Wales in Sydney with Andrew McCarthy, Head of APAC and Asia at Notion. Tickets are in the description below. I hope to see you there. Hello and welcome to In the Blink of AI, where I talk to the brightest AI startups and innovators each week. I'm Georgie Healy, and this week I'm speaking to Will Liang. Here's some breaking news for you. He is an independent AI expert, but up until last week, he was the executive director and CTO at MA Financial. They have 700 employees, 10.3 million in assets under management. But you'll see his passion for AI in this episode. I'm not surprised he's doubling down on his AI expertise to help businesses adapt to this incredible time in tech. After listening to this episode, it won't surprise you that Will is a LinkedIn top voice in AI. He was awarded the most influential Asian Australian under 40 and global top 100 innovator in data analytics. On the episode, we chat about his background as an ex-professional Go player, understanding what makes an incredible AI rapper, the power of AI tools in everyday life, and I even get to ask Will to exercise his financial chops, evaluating different AI models, his prediction for the future in companies like NVIDIA and OpenAI. Oof, this was a fun episode. Thank you so much, Will, for coming on the show. Let's dive in. Hello, Will. Happy Friday and welcome to In the Blink of AI.
Happy Friday.
Look, I am so excited to be meeting with you. When we first met, I admit the first thing that came into my mind is, I would love to have Will on my podcast. We met at a Gen AI meetup and you were the keynote and welcome speaker. You gave the most incredible presentation. And then I realized afterwards, he's a seasoned professional. You delivered a very successful TED Talk. You had a room of 150 people. I've got the photos, in complete rapture watching you and your presentation. But before we talk a little bit more about that, I would love to hear about your background.
Yeah, sure. Look, I'm always in financial services, in technology space. So I had many, many different technology leadership roles, with the most recent one, executive director of data technology and AI for MA Asset Management, which is an alternative asset manager here in Australia. So I look after all the data and technology initiative for the organization, you know, all the really boring stuff.
You say that, I bet a lot of people would have been very impressed by your job. So it's that intersection of finance and tech, right?
Yes, absolutely. It's always been the intersection of finance and tech. And for me, that's what really excites me, right? Because finance is really the beating heart of the Australian ecosystem. And technology is really the fancy kid on the block, right? So that intersection really excites me.
Yeah, it's funny. I think we're in the right space at the right time. It feels like a very exciting time, doesn't it, in technology? Look, I'd love to start the show about sharing some groundbreaking news. You are about to embark on a new career chapter. Is there anything you can tell us about this? The show will go live probably around the 11th of April or thereabouts.
Yeah, no, thank you. Yes, I'm starting a new company. Let me explain that. So everyone's heard about AI, right? Everyone's heard about AI, and but most of the company are talking about it, right? What do I mean by that is, you know, let's make sure we have agenda items in the next board meeting to talk about AI, right? So many companies are still at that stage, and some organizations say they are using AI, but if you ask them, they say we have Copilot.
Yes.
Right, so that different stage. But what I really found is very, very few organizations, very few, actually using AI at the core of their business, right? Integrated AI into the core business processes. So I'm launching a company that help organizations to go beyond this buzzword. Right? There are three things I want to do. One is I want to help companies with their AI and data strategy. I want to help companies with technology, AI architecture, and implementation, and also education for AI is also very important. Right? So it's really about helping business embed AI into the beating heart of the organization, right? Not just as a side hustle, but as a core capability.
Look, I am so excited for you, not only because you're leveraging this incredible background. Guys, please look at Will's LinkedIn page of tech and finance, but you are such an incredible communicator that I think this is something that, you know, if you use too much jargon or even, you know, you could leverage all that incredible insight you have, but if you can't communicate in a way that organizations actually know how to implement it, you might miss the mark. Please tell me what made you make this huge decision. You've got such an incredible role description in your previous role. Why make the jump?
That's a great question. So I see myself as a purple person. Have you heard the term purple person?
I have, but I've forgotten what it means. Please explain it.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. It's essentially what we say on the business side, people are blue people. On the technology side, the people are red. They are the red people.
Oh.
Right? I've been on both sides. So I see myself as a purple person. And I feel I'm very well positioned to really solve some of the hardest problems for businesses. And that's really what I'm super excited about. Super excited about. I've always been in this problem solving space, and not sure if I mentioned to you, but I spent 10 years in my childhood as a professional Go player. So Go is a traditional chess type of game. I say probably the hardest game that human ever invented. Very popular in China, in Japan, in Korea. So I spent a large chunk of my life playing that professionally. So it's all about that problem solving, that the hard problem excites me, right? Also very different from the traditional kind of consulting concept, right? So my goal is really to help organization with a SWOT team concept. So think about SWOT team, think about Navy SEAL. It's essentially a small team of people deployed to the most challenging situations to solve the hardest problems and do it successfully and do it quickly using AI and technology.
Incredible. I'm very proud of myself for not shrieking when you said that you were a professional Go player. My context and understanding around Go is around how AI played Go. Can you please tell the listeners a little bit about that story, just because this is just such an incredible story in the world of AI?
Yeah, absolutely. So Go, it's a very complex game. And in fact, in the technology space, has always been regarded as a holy grail for AI, right? So AI have solved chess in the 70s and solved many other games, but Go was just so difficult to solve for AI. And a lot of people say it will take another 50 years or 100 years before that happens. Until 2016, DeepMind in UK created this tool called AlphaGo, and that defeated the best Go player at the time, Lee Sedol in Korea. I was watching that game, obviously heartbroken. What I'm going to do with my life. And, you know, obviously that was also a trigger point for me to go, hey, I really need to learn AI very, very seriously. And this technology is absolutely amazing. So it's an interesting moment in my life, but also interesting moment for the entire AI industry as well, right? So that's when techniques such as reinforcement learning, such as deep learning, can really closely look at. And these days, Go is still a very fascinating game. A lot of people say, hey, AI defeated Go. Would Go just completely die? That actually didn't happen. Last year, I was in Japan, in one of the big bookstore, and there was this entire section, all Go books, right?
Really?
But these days, it's all about how do you defeat AI? Things are changing, but it's fascinating.
Do we have a second professional career path in Go for you, Will, one day? Try and beat AI?
Yeah, maybe. I'll do a bit of a teaching. I still have my best friends still teaching Go in China. More popular than ever these days, because AlphaGo send a message to many other people. Hey, come and learn Go. It's interesting.
That is fascinating. You telling me that story, it did make me think of the expression, if you can't beat them, join them. And that's kind of what you did with AI, right?
Exactly.
I would love to get your take with your incredible background and insights and what I have seen firsthand, that you're playing with all the AI tools, you're using all the AI tools, you're knowledgeable, and you're not, you know, just picking one tool and sticking with that the whole way through. So I've got some AI headlines and I would love to get your perspective. 2025 keeps being touted as the year of the AI agent. How does that sit with you, Will? Do you agree with this?
AI agent is such a fascinating concept, and I think that it's just a great concept, but I don't think we fully understand, or most people don't fully understand what AI agent actually is, right? So I like to say these days, most of the AI agent out there, we call them AI agent, they're just simply AI workflows.
I love that you're already being so honest. Thank you.
Yeah, it's essentially rare where they're very, different ways of prompting a large language model, right? Or you can do a parallel prompt, you can do a chain prompt, you can prompt multiple large language models to achieve objective. Most of them are just AI workflows. What AI agent is, I think, in my view, there's two things that you have to satisfy. One is you give an AI agent objective, right? Then it will take this objective and develop a list of steps to achieve that objective autonomously, right? Number one. Number two, you need to be able to carry out each of the steps autonomously itself, right? So those two are important features of an agent. I like to think about as an analogy, if you used 000, like emergency call here in Australia, 000, right? If you use it, when you call 000, what do you say? You'll say, what's your name? Where are you? Are you bracing? Are you bleeding? Those kind of, it's a set of questions predefined, right, by human. So in these cases, they are not AI agent. They're just simply AI workflows. What AI agent is, let's say my wife like pineapple, for example, right? She
yes.
loves pineapple, and she say, Will, can you go get me a pineapple? You need to, you spend somewhere between $10 to $20, right? Make sure it's not green color. Make sure it's yellow. And you go to local supermarket in the north of Sydney to buy it. So obviously, if I follow those steps she gave me, I'm not an AI agent, right? But I don't follow steps, right? So what I do, I got the objective, say, hey, we'll go buy a pineapple. I'm so excited. Hey, I got this objective. So I go to my laptop. I start searching, where has the best pineapple in the world? Japan. So I go to Qantas. I go, hey, book me a ticket to Japan. And I'll go ski while I'm there. I do a bit of skiing there and buy a pineapple from Japan, fly back to Australia.
You're such a good husband, Will. Yes.
Fly back to Australia. And I go, show the customer I need to declare a pineapple. Of course, they don't like it.
Oh, yes.
I had to leave the pineapple at the custom.
Oh, no.
I said, it's okay. I go to, I go to supermarket, local, coast, and I buy a pineapple between $10 to $20 and go back home, right? So if you think about that particular example, I'm really the agent because I take objective, I come up with the steps autonomously myself, and I carry out each individual steps. So in that case, I'm an AI agent. Now, at the moment in the market, very, very little AI tools actually do that, right? So one good example I say is, so OpenAI released a tool called Deep Search, or Deep Research, in fact, inside ChatGPT. which is something I highly recommend. I think it's a really good tool. And that's a good example of AI agent, right? You ask a particular question, it figure out what are some of the websites it needs to go to actually find the relevant information for that particular question, right? Then it will go to a website, let's say 20 different websites, and grab the information, come back, synthesize them, and come up with a report. So that's a very simple but useful example of agent. There's many other examples, but that, you know, that's one I recommend these days. But don't get me wrong, though. Most of the business problems don't need an AI agent to solve.
Interesting.
There's much, much simpler solutions to solve problems than having to tinker an agent.
I can't help but think that OpenAI weren't thinking of me and my upcoming trip to Europe when they developed deep research, but that's the only use case I've used it for. Like, I like medieval architecture and I like this and I like that. What should I do in Europe in these locations for these days? What is a good use case for an AI agent, maybe in Australia or elsewhere? What's one of the best examples you can think of, Will?
There are plenty, let's say in financial services as an example. If I want to, you know, sell to a new market, right? Say I'm going to, let's say China next month, right? Go to a new market. Hey, can you help me to find out the top 10 infrastructure funds in China, right? Find out that for each of these infrastructure funds, find out the top three decision makers, their title, their name, and their contact details, and put everything back into report for me, right? So things like this, again, sounds very simple, but traditional, all these are done by analysts, right? Taking hours or days and trying to find this information. But AI agent can really help with this kind of information gathering exercise. Now, it's not perfect. It's not 100%. It's probably not 80%, to be honest.
Really?
But that's okay. Right. But that's okay. If you get 70%, you can get people to handle the rest 30%. But also, I don't know about you, but I'm a procrastinating person, right? For me, usually writing the first two lines in a report is the most difficult part, right?
100%. Agree.
Have an AI tool to get you 70% there, that's pretty remarkable.
Oh, yeah, good point. It's a lot easier to start with a foundation and edit from there, right? Or be
exactly.
I wouldn't add that. I can remove it. But a blank sheet of paper is tough, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I wonder if you agree with a sentiment that my husband came up with the other day. He works in asset management himself in capital markets. And I was so excited because I work in tech and I'm obsessed with AI. I've got a podcast in AI. I love AI. And I said, you should use ChatGPT or Gemini to help you think of questions to ask companies. And he said to me, look, for me, it's raising the floor, but not the ceiling. It's not making him any better at his job. It's not got any more interesting questions. He said, look, as a starting analyst, to your point, maybe I would expect this level of work, but it's actually not really helping him in his day-to-day. I'm curious if you agree, if he's missing something, should I go back and tell him, oh, he's doing it wrong?
Yeah, look, I largely agree. So I observe a lot in this space in, let's say, developers, right, programmers, where I found what AI helping the most is the middle-level developers, right? So if you're too junior, in many cases, you don't really know the right question to ask, right? And these days, what we say, vibe coding. Have you heard this term, vibe coding, getting more and more popular? And so essentially, you don't code anymore, but you just prompt a large language model to help you to code. So what you do is you review the code and you make sure it's right, right? Which is interesting because for really junior entry-level developers, right, it doesn't necessarily help as much because you don't necessarily know what question to ask. And secondly, you don't necessarily have the capability to review it. But that middle-level developers is remarkably helpful, right? Sometimes we call it 10 times developer. So essentially, you can take a middle-level developer into that 10 times developer category. Now,
wow.
If you are at the very, very top, right, extremely good at what you do, So this is where I found AI may not be able to give you a better idea, right? I mean, because at the end of the day, at the moment, AI tools are trained with human data, right? So with human data. So if you're at the top, then what AI tools give you may not be that helpful for you, right? So that's why I said I largely agree with what your husband say. Now, there is a exception.
Yeah, tell me where he's wrong so I can tell.
Yeah, so so again, back to the Go example, right?
Yeah.
So when DeepMind trained AlphaGo, it was trained on millions of historical games played by human, between two humans, right? They play Go, then they record a game on a piece of paper, then the AlphaGo were trained on those data. So conceptually, it would be not be as good as human in terms of the thinking, right? Or not going to be far beyond human thinking, right? Because it's trained based on human data. Now, then later what DeepMind did was quite remarkable. You start playing Go between two machines, right? You use use one AI.
Make them fight.
make them fight billions of times. Billions of times every day, every week. So now, there's a very famous move called, move 37 or 47, I can't remember exactly, one of the games. That move, after it was made by AI, there's no human expert were able to comprehend. People go, that's ridiculous, right? There's no way, that makes no sense. But it only makes sense after hundreds of moves later.
Oh.
Right? So that's been quite scary. And that is getting generalized or translated into large language model these days as well, right? So we can talk a lot more about DeepSeek later on, but DeepSeek play a part in this arena as well. So at some point, AI will be able to develop things that human not able to comprehend. And that's quite scary, but exciting.
Scary but exciting is exactly how I feel right now. It's like, you'd see it and think that maybe it's made a mistake or done something silly.
Exactly.
But it's thinking 100 moves ahead.
Exactly.
Wow. Okay. It reminds me of another expression. It's like, you just don't get me. And that's how the AI is feeling.
You just
it's
don't
not
get
that
me.
I'm stupid. Yeah. You just don't get me yet.
That's just three different stages many people categorize, right? You have the artificial narrow intelligence, which is where we are right now. Where AI is very good with specific tasks. Then the second stage is artificial general intelligence, which many people predict it will happen during Trump administration. So within the next three, four years. And where AGI means AI is as good as human for all tasks. Then the next stage is...
There's a next stage? What?
This next stage, yeah, that's right. Which is ASI, artificial superintelligence, where AI's capabilities go far beyond human comprehension. We don't understand. That's what I was saying about that. Move 37 is a very, very small example of that.
Are you pro ASI, Will, or are you anti?
Oh, I'm pro AI in general. I'm a technology optimist. I think we need to figure out how to leverage and how to put guardrails and parameters to leverage this very powerful technology. But to be honest, my view is the ship has sailed, right? We have to think about how to manage it. We think about how to integrate it. That I don't think we can control it. We should control it.
Yes. Thank you very much. That was incredibly insightful. Speaking of insightful, you're a top voice on LinkedIn. It comes as no surprise to me. And I'd love to unpack a post that you made semi-recently, something we've never really unpacked on the show before. Let me just say in your words, and then I'll ask the question. It was about Perplexity AI. You said they had a $1 billion raise and an $18 billion valuation with zero proprietary models. Their weapon, a wrapper that delivers better experience and better trust. Firstly, can you tell the listeners what an AI wrapper versus a proprietary LLM is? And then maybe tell us why the Perplexity wrapper is so superior and they're doing so well with it.
Yeah, sure. If you look at the kind of an AI ecosystem as a whole, right, I categorize them as three different layers. at very bottom layer, you have the infrastructure players, the chip makers, the like of NVIDIA, ARMs, and all the cloud service providers, Amazon and Microsoft, Google, Alibaba in China. So that's the bottom layer, right? If you look at the bottom layer, that's not where a lot of money are made at the moment. Then you go one layer up, which is the platform layer. Essentially, these are the large language models, right? Large language model, or could be image model, or could be a video model, but the models require a lot of training, require a lot of inferencing. Or you have obviously the most famous one is OpenAI. Then you have Claude, you have Google Gemini, you have other models. This layer is the layer that we talk about a lot in conversations in media. Right? Media like to talk about these layers. But one layer up is the application layer. So this is really the evolving space of AI, right? So now we have language model. What can we do with it to solve business problems? And Perplexity kind of sitting in that layer where they don't have a model themselves, but what they do is they essentially it's a search. So they're kind of competing with Google, right? So you do a search, right? You type in your question in Perplexity, then it will go to Google and other places to perform a search and grab the result back and put the result into one of the models. Doesn't have to be OpenAI, doesn't have to be. I think recently they even put DeepSeek there, right? Which is very popular, running DeepSeek on Perplexity to synthesize and compile all the information together and give it back. So the benefit of this is reduce hallucination. A lot of people consider, hey, I asked OpenAI this example a couple of years ago. I asked OpenAI, they come back with a whole bunch of legal questions and they give you some fake legal cases.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we've talked about those on the show before. Very embarrassing. Yeah.
Quite embarrassing. I don't think they do that anymore, but there was an example a couple of years ago. Let's say example hallucination, where with Perplexity, everything has a reference because it does a search first. Everything has a reference. It pinpoint where did you find information before it gave to you. So that gives people a lot of confidence. So that's an interesting model. That's a good model. But the way they did it is they create this layer of wrapper on top of different language models. So we see this also with many, many different other startups, right? So OpenAI has API, that's application programming interface, a way to interact with OpenAI programmatically. Claude has APIs, so different models have APIs. So we see a group of companies or large chunk of companies created to interact with models. Then they create an interface on top of it to solve problems. Not sure whether you remember, in the beginning stage of OpenAI. If you go to Apple Store, you search for ChatGPT, you have like 20 or 50 different apps, all call themselves like ChatGPT and stuff, right? So essentially what they do is they use ChatGPT API, then they put an interface in front of it. So that's kind of an AI wrapper.
Cheeky.
Very cheeky, and there has been a lot of interesting stories about AI wrapper. One of them is it doesn't really have a lot of IP, right? It doesn't have a lot of value. And every time if there's a change in OpenAI or if they make some improvement, AI wrapper would be broken. So there's many different stories around it. So there's many people think AI wrapper is actually not a good thing. I don't do that. Right? Perplexity kind of is changing people's perception on that. Their business model is interesting. It looks really good. It looks really positive. And they're starting to commercialize it as well with adding ads into their model. Then they start a business model. And also they're starting competing with AWS, Amazon as well from a shopping perspective. They provide this shopping experience. You can just do a search. And it connect directly with vendors. You can one click to buy things. So quite interesting model, quite a successful wrapper, I would say.
Yeah, very insightful. Like I've heard wrapper in quite negative derogatory connotations. Oh, it's a wrapper. Yeah. Like as in it's cheating or something. But as you mentioned, Perplexity has a lot of brand power, a lot of loyal users. And I would have thought that people that are using Perplexity would have been kind of tech snobs and been like, I wouldn't use a wrapper. But they seem to be really supportive of it. Do you use Perplexity, Will? Do you like it?
I do. I really like it. In fact, I have a pro license. I have a pay license until very recently. I stopped. I like it. I recommend to a lot of my friends and colleagues and other people about this particular tool. I think that, as I mentioned earlier, that giving the reference is something that they did the very beginning when other models were not doing it. And they attract a lot of very, very good positive attention.
Giving the reference allows the user to know where that source came from, and that kind of thing is helpful, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But also, I'm quite positive about them, because there is a trend that large language model will become commodity at some stage, right? And you should be able to, change and replace a model with another without too much trouble, and they provide that layer of abstraction on top of it. For many businesses, right, they shouldn't care what model they use underneath. What they should care is they solve the business problem. So that layer of abstraction is actually pretty positive.
I'm not surprised you use Perplexity. I have seen in action you sharing many different examples of AI tools that you've used, and to very impressive degree. I have you to thank that I have a Kling AI obsession, turning images of my face into very cool videos. I'm not sure whether to thank you or like apologize to all my friends and family that I've sent those videos to. But in all seriousness, Will, how do you keep on top of it all? Like, you're a top voice, you're constantly sharing your insights, you use all these tools. Like, is there any way that we can copy you even on a small level? How do we get on top of all of it?
Oh, look, everyone can do it. I think for me, largely it's because of passion. Absolutely, sometimes you do things, you just don't feel tired, right? Let me tell you a secret. I hate running. Many of my friends trying to drag me into running with them, and I just absolutely hate it. So, that's something you're really sucking your energy, right? Consuming energy. But for things like, AI tools, exploring different AI tools, I just generate so much energy because of passion. So I think passion is probably one very important thing. And the other thing is really to solve real world problems with it. You see all these feedback, right? Very positive feedback coming from solving real-world problems with AI tools. So I say one of the key mindset change that I encourage everyone to have is AI first, right? So let's say you have two screens on your desktop, whether it's at work or at home, or three screens for some people. Try to have one screen always have one AI tool that there all the time. Your favorite one, ChatGPT, let's say. Right, you just put down screen, and that keep reminding yourself. Doesn't matter what you do, you try to use AI to do it first. Right, you try that for a week; it's quite life changing.
Wow, I love this tip. Even have it like half the screen; just have the model there.
Absolutely, absolutely. Usually, financial services, what happens? Usually, you have two screens or three screens. Yeah, one Excel on the left, one Excel on the right, and Outlook at the bottom. Right, because after you making those Excels, you need to send somewhere on Outlook, right? So, but replace one of the Excel with ChatGPT or other tools, life changing.
Oh my gosh, you are such a financial background person. You remind me of everyone I know in finance that have like eight screens, like it's like Wall Street in your office. Look, speaking of your financial background, I have some quick questions I couldn't not ask you. Like, having you on the show, I have to get your take on. One is, does NVIDIA remain a monopoly, Will? Like, if you had to guess, in 5 years, do they still dominate the chip market? What do your spidey senses tell you?
So nothing here is financial advice. I just want to be clear about that.
No.
But so my personal take is I don't think they will dominate, but I think they will continue to grow. They'll continue to earn a lot of money, because the pie is going to be bigger and getting bigger and bigger and bigger, right? If you look at the chips market at the moment, NVIDIA is doing really well, obviously. But companies like Google have their own chip, right? They have their own TPU chips that's very good with different things, right? There's lots of people, maybe you can correct me here as well, it's your background. But a lot of people say, hey, why Google Gemini has such a big context window, right? So if you look very a lot deeper, you know, partially because the architecture of the TPU is very different from NVIDIA GPUs, and that allowed them to have a super large context window.
Which is important because it can remember things you've said a while back. You're
exactly,
not reminding
right.
it constantly. No, I already explained that.
Yeah, it's a very, very distinct advantage. Then you look at Apple. Right. Apple have unified memory, which is, again, a very different domain. Unified memory has its own advantage. What I'm trying to do at the moment at home is I'm trying to build this kind of a DIY station with a few Apple Minis, and each one of them have 64 gigabytes of unified memory, which is both GPU and CPU. And you stack four or five or six of them together, you can actually run a pretty large language model. Let's say Llama 4 or 5B at home.
Oh my goodness.
That is not possible to do with NVIDIA, right? The best NVIDIA consumer graphic card is 5090, which only have, I think, 24 gigabytes, right? So that unified memory is another model. So I guess what I'm trying to say is there will be different chips out there that have very different advantages compared to NVIDIA that people love to use, right? So. But with NVIDIA, I think it will still go strong and still be winning because the market will get a lot bigger. A lot more companies will jump on AI, a lot consumers will jump on AI, and it's just going to be so much more demand. Again, another thing is DeepSeek. A lot of people say DeepSeek is going to tank NVIDIA. It's changing the game, etc. That is true from some aspect. But at the end of the day, what DeepSeek has given people is you're making language model much more accessible. Free, a lot of people can use it for much lower cost. And because they enter the market, we'll see other companies like OpenAI and like Claude, they will reduce their price, all which they have. So again, in making a lot more people start using AI models, and the net result of that is, you know, more people will buy NVIDIA chips.
Oh. That was such a great answer. Thank you so much. I also think of your poor wife and you're like stacking up your laptops all over the house and trying to build a supercomputer. I think I'd tell my husband to take it to the garage or something.
Well, it's going to winter season in Australia, so a bit more heat is not a bad thing.
Yeah. You won't need to put it on your heaters. One more question in this kind of area before we get to the rapid fire, if that's okay.
Sure.
What about ChatGPT? Does it remain top of the charts? Although when I wrote this question, you know, Gemini hadn't had its latest release. But for argument's sake, does ChatGPT remain top of the charts for model quality? Or do the incumbents have scale, and are they able to dominate in future years? Not financial advice, Will. What do you say?
Yeah, sure. Look, I see OpenAI in general, they're quite innovative. I still think a lot of things they do is very top of the game. Obviously, they're having an early advantage, right? They're early in the market. If you look at the entire AI tool usage, which was recently published by A16Z, they're still by far the number one, right? Not even number two or three, not even close. And one reason is that early advantage, but also the other reason, I do think they are very innovative of the things they come out, right? Such as deep research, as I mentioned. Then another thing it came out a few days ago is image generation, which kind of blew everybody's mind, right? It was just so good.
The Studio Ghibli memes everywhere.
Yeah, so that's like taking the, if you look beyond that meme, the actual model itself to generate image is super good, right? I asked last night for it to generate three very cute animals, I think the cutest, and with a text set cute animal at the very top, and generated a poster like this, right? The text was spot on. Perfect. The animals were perfect. The only thing about text was a little bit cut off, right? The mm-hmm. top of the cute, the four letters cut off a little bit. Then what I just circle that a bit. I go, hey, make sure it doesn't cut off. Then generate again. Again, the perfect, right? With word not cut off. So really, really, really amazing, amazing
wow.
stuff. Now, having said that, I do think other models will continue to have very distinct advantages and continue to gain market share. If you look at Claude as example, right? I use Claude for creative writing. I use Claude for coding, right? So those two things is something I would not use ChatGPT for. Because if you look at ChatGPT, like to use very big words, right? Such as, let's delve into this topic, right? Delve, right? Using delve.
No one says 50, that.
Times, right?
Yeah.
I have this tapestry of ideas, right? Again, very big words. Whereas creative writing, you want to be in a very simple and punchy style sometimes. So for me, Claude is better. Also, coding Sonnet 3.7 is the coding tool of choice. Google Gemini, very good model, especially 2.5. If you haven't tried 2.5, I recommend people to have a try. Really impressed by the overall quality of 2.5. But in particular, around videos, in particular, I would say if you have anything to do with video processing, analyzing video, use Google, right? So Google, from that perspective, is way ahead of the game, partially because of the ownership of YouTube, I'd imagine.
Thank you so much for that insightful answer. I'm going to have to start playing with Claude a little bit more because I do get frustrated with the tapestry of words that I get from OpenAI sometimes. We are at the final part of the interview. I would love to ask you three rapid-fire questions. Are you ready to go?
Oh, I love rapid-fire. Go. Let's go. We'll have fun.
Top three best AI tools that everyone needs to try at home.
Definitely, if you have an OpenAI, ChatGPT is one of them. I would rate Claude being the second one. The third one, I'll say Perplexity.
Oh, incredible. And what about one scary headline we might expect this year or next year?
Oh, that is a very challenging one. I think it has to come from something around deep fake. Deep fake is getting remarkably well, right? So, you mentioned Kling, which is very good with generating images, other things. There is something called OmniHuman, which just released within the last 24 hours. So if you haven't, definitely check it out. It's so, so real. So you can turn an image, you give an image, still image, plus an audio file, then it start lip syncing and that person start talking. It's scary. So I think it has to come from something around deep fake. So again, this is a time to caution everybody, just make sure you use human judgment, right?
Yeah, be careful by what you see and be careful what you put in the models, guys. And frankly, I kind of realized the hard way when I was using Kling. Oh my gosh, I really need to make sure that the only things I'm uploading here are my own faces. Even if I think my friend might find it funny to put their image in, I feel like there needs to be a little bit of privacy and security, and don't do stuff like that you haven't been okay with. People might feel uncomfortable seeing their own image, even if you meant it in the right way, right? Last question. If I was to wave a magic wand, Will, and I know you're about to go through a career pivot, but I'm giving you a different role, and that is as CEO of OpenAI, what are the top three things you prioritize first?
I will certainly think very hard about the emergence of open source models, such as DeepSeek, I think has changed the game. I think if I'm CEO of OpenAI, I would think very deeply, how do I respond to DeepSeek? From a commercial perspective, right? Should I lower my price of the models? How to make it cheaper and faster for everybody? Secondly is how can we open source or open weight some of the models we have? And lastly is how do we educate people? How do we build some of those models, right? Because again, with DeepSeek, a lot of people call it is the Sputnik moment, right? So the Sputnik moment is where the satellite was sent to the orbit by Soviet Union. Then everyone was scared, and that was kind of regarded as one of the starting moment for the Cold War. A lot of people say, hey, DeepSeek is the Sputnik moment for AI. Except one thing, right? What DeepSeek did is it sent the satellite up, give everyone a free satellite, and also you tell everybody how they actually build a satellite, right? So I think it's a gift for humanity. So if I'm the CEO of OpenAI, while I'm still innovating, I really need to think really deeply about how to respond to DeepSeek in a very, very positive way that's benefiting everybody.
Will, you are such an incredible guest of the show. You're an incredibly knowledgeable expert in AI. Anyone that wants to work with you in future is incredibly lucky. I want to give the last part of the show an opportunity for you to shout out to anything you want the listeners to be aware of, and maybe even where they can follow you on socials to get your incredible top voice knowledge and insights.
Yeah, sure. I'd love to connect with your listeners on LinkedIn. Yeah, please follow me on LinkedIn. I do post very regularly. I post every week a top five most interesting things in technology, where I distill down into five most interesting topic and have a discussion there. And I also post pretty regularly throughout the week about latest about AI and technology. One thing I want to highlight is there's a lot of hype around AI and buzzword about AI at the moment, but AI doesn't exist by itself, right? It coexists with technology system, coexists with data systems. So we're going to look at everything as a whole. I didn't want to position myself as only the expert, but really it's a technology expert on social media. Please follow me on LinkedIn. I'd love to have a conversation. And as I mentioned in the very beginning, I'm starting a new venture, a new chapter, a new company. I'd love to have a conversation to help organizations to solve your most difficult problems with AI and technology.
I am so excited for your next chapter. It's going to be incredible, and I can't think of anyone better suited to this space.
Thank you.
Your passion is so clear. Thank you, Will, for being on the show. I can't wait to talk to you again in future, and have a great weekend.
Thank you for having me here. Have a good weekend.
Thank you for listening to In the Blink of AI. You can check out the show notes for anything discussed in this week's episode, and we will be back next week. This podcast was produced by Day One, with music by Dan Hansen and visual artwork by Sophie Tyrell. If you loved the episode, please tell your mates, and I love AI news. Please share your thoughts and suggestions to GeorginaRoseHealy@gmail.com.
Pick My Brain is the podcast where founders pitch me their startup and I try to give them some useful advice so they can connect better with potential co-founders, investors, media, and of course, customers. My name's Alan Jones and I was a founder myself for about 15 years, and after that an angel investor for another 15 years, so yeah, old. Some of my ventures have been successful and some failed disastrously, but I like to think I've learned a thing or two along the way, and maybe some of that can help you. So if you'd like to learn how to tweak your pitch, subscribe to the Pick My Brain show now, wherever you like to listen to podcasts.